Hey, baby. You here, baby? Yeah, you here, baby. Tune in to the Paul Leslie Hour. You know, for 19 years and counting, the purpose of this show is to help people tell their stories. If you like to listen, you're in the right place. Paul is back from a journey to Nash Vegas, baby. It was Monday morning when he was summoned to the home of Mr. Peter Mayer. Now, maybe it was destiny that they would wind up in such a comfortable place to talk about songs for the birds. That's Peter's latest album on the Little Flack Music label. You even gonna be treated to some unplugged vocal and guitar performances of songs from that record. Yeah, baby. What a conversation you're about to see. And Paul would like to give you his heartfelt thanks for the homemade breakfast. Keep in mind, folks, this is 2023. Eggs is luxury dining. Was Peter Mayer being poetic? Songs for the birds? Eggs? Just keep in mind the Paul Leslie Hour made possible by you, the audience at home. Just go on over to www.thepaulleslie.com/support. And we thank you for being a patron of the spoken word. This interview is not going to start till I say the word. And as a wise man once wrote, bird is the word.
By the way, how's the coffee?
It's wonderful.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
Very good. Well, Peter Mayer, thank you so much for inviting me into your home. It's a great pleasure to be here.
It's good to be here. What we need now is the pan around the room, although then you'd see all the leftover detritus from the wedding we just went through, my daughter, India, after all these years. You'd see the dogs wandering through the kitchen. This is Lando.
Lando.
Yeah, Lando. But this is an honor to have you here, Paul, with all the... I was telling someone this morning, your record of interviews spans far and wide, from Matheny to Tony Bennett to just a ton of people you have talked to. It's pretty amazing.
It's been a great list.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about this most recent record from Peter Mayer, Songs for the Birds.
Yeah, that's it.
And I was first listening to this, it was kind of like a picturesque kind of experience to listen to an album. It was pitch black on this little island. There was a full moon, and I listened to this from beginning to end. And it was a great kind of hypnotic way to listen to a record. And there is a bit of a natural or nature-oriented feeling to this album. I mean, not just the title, but is that something, do you concur? Is there something in
it,
here?
It is, yeah. I think you're right. I mean, when listening across it, I mean, not to mention, as you said, the title, kind of the freshness of songs coming through my notebook, as fresh as, you know, the random birds that come into your yard in the morning. So that kind of scene that the title emanated from draws to some of the lyrics, and two of a kind, you know, you were walking the woods out back. These are things I do just about every day here in Nashville, or even if I'm on the road with Jimmy Buffett, or I love getting out in some solitude. And 'cause there aren't any songs without solitude of some kind, no matter how gregarious you are. And I have my moments, you know, there's a time to be gregarious. My God, we just were through a wedding, which forces you to be pretty gregarious for a while. But it has to be followed for me with just some real quiet time, which usually, believe it or not, feels uncomfortable at first. It's kind of like... I think we get so used to filling our houses with ornaments, or making sure we've got a road real close to our woods so we don't get lost. You know what I mean? When that very mystery itself is to me where the best lyric comes from. You kind of open up to have the muse speak to you. And so I think your catching nature in the album, in the title, is really accurate. I think it's also the fact that that muse makes nature of wherever we are. You know, it kind of turns it into this natural environment. Kind of like you're having coffee with someone you really feel comfortable with, rather than, I need to be official here, you know.
Right.
I need to say the proper things. This album came from the things that weren't proper or weren't timely, but just refused to go away. You know,
refused.
They kept
to go
asking
away.
Me to say them.
Ah, I see. Well, the album starts with "The Loneliest Road in America," and you know, sometimes people have this idea about loneliness or solitude. It has a negative connotation, but there's a lot that can be gained from solitude.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it forces, I think, some instincts that are older than, of course, we are, or even our fathers and mothers and generation. It goes back to our basic survival instinct. And it talks about going down this lonesome highway, you know, traveling out west. And I make a reference to the soon-to-be, back then, marriage of my daughter. We're going out to California, which we stayed in Nashville, but still sounded good for the story. We're going out to California to marry my daughter, and we're on the stretch of highway going through Nevada, I guess, and highway, what was it, Highway 30, I think it is. Anyway, called the loneliest road in America, and you can see the remnants of ghost towns and all that, and it had an obvious connection to solitude and all, and in personal growth. I mean, here I'm in my 60s and I'm still able to play both Jimmy Buffett and my own. But it had a reference to where we are as a country, you know, and but not just, I'm not just talking a country in terms of two parties or black and white or older and younger generations or rich and poor. I'm talking about something that probably every nation or community has gone through, which is what used to work for us is doesn't seem to be working right now. Or we're going through a really hard stretch. We just got hit with a son of a bitch of a pandemic. We've had a lot of political anxieties going on from whichever side or sides you happen to stand. And it just, ever since I saw that Life article about the loneliest road in America, this was done back, I think, in the 80s, I thought there's a song of this title that's got to just talk about what each life experiences and also what our nation has experienced about finding ourselves as we age. And for me also, it was about my relationship with a woman after all these years. Where are we left? We know each other so well, we're not sure we know each other at all. And we need to start again, you know, kind of thing. And so one of the lyrics says, you know, we're finding our way home on the loneliest road in America, that kind of thing. So,
did you set off to make an album like Songs for the Bird? Or would you say it's something that is it more the case that you just allowed it to happen?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I allowed it to happen. Very good question. Because I think a lot of times it doesn't happen that way. I'm talking about me, my dear friends, such as Scott Kirby, who you recently interviewed, Jimmy Buffett, Mac McAnally, any artist I really respect does. You think about what you've delivered so far, what you've shared in your life, and then what is expected of you because you've shared that. And then the decision comes, do I go where those paths have not been trod yet, trodden? And with this album, I had a notebook open, and I started noticing, Paul, that there were songs resurfacing that, I kid you not, 15 years ago I had thought of titles. And I thought, the titles usually come with a couple things. They come with a little spark, and then I get a chill at the back of my neck, like kind of like, whoa, something just passed, like a little shock. And I usually write down what I was just thinking about. And I noticed that same old thing. One of them was The Loneliest Road in America. And I thought, damn it, this year, I'm going to pay attention to those. And I'm going to... The old Jimmy Stewart movie, Flight of the Phoenix, he uses... They're stranded in the desert, and he uses one of the charges to clear the pipes out so that they can actually start the engine and fly again. I thought, I'm going to clear the pipes. I'm going to let this happen. I'm going to let those little voices that chirp outside my window in the morning to speak, because I think they are utterly vital to us and so easily in this modern day ignorable, if that's a word, able to be ignored. And that's basically where this came from. I'm making room. I'm making a open field for you songs. Come get me now, because this is the time that you're welcome, you know. When often, I'll say one more thing. Often the thought is, what is the song that will fit this format the best? And who am I going to write it with so I get the most plays possible? And now, I won't lie to you and say that that wasn't on my mind. At times, I want people to enjoy this album. But I decided that is not going to be my bottom line in this album. The bottom line is going to be honesty. What I love, doing it as best as I physically can with the time I've got. So,
well, kind of the way you were talking about writing with people, planning. We're in an area, Nashville, where, I mean, songs are born every day. And, you know, there's not necessarily a country influence in this album, or at least not overt so much. But I'm curious, there's got to be, I mean, there's so many country music songwriters. Being that you've lived here so long, would you say country music has started to influence you?
Yeah, and I think I have Jimmy Buffett really to thank for that, for the part of his musical genre that is country. His years in Nashville is not only a journalist, but a songwriter. Come Monday, you know. Working with Mac as well, and his association with, and his penning so many wonderful country hits. I think it's true, and I may not use the word country, but this town has definitely influenced me with its use of acoustic guitar, and coming here was a departure from my St. Louis years, 35 of them, which is a long time, but of studying jazz and rock and roll years and PM and the 80s sound and all that. And in that, Paul, it's an interesting question you ask, because we musicians, and I'm lucky in that I've gotten to work with so many different people, from Dave Weckl to Jimmy Buffett to Roger Guth to my brother Jim to Chicago. I mean, I've been able and fortunate enough to touch base with all those styles that, as a musician, one of our hardest jobs is to find our most honest and most meaningful boundaries about what we do, and not feel like we have to do everything. When I spent some time learning Glamour Profession, the Donald Fagen song, the other day from Gaucho, one of the most amazing songs I've ever heard. And I immediately want to do a whole album of that, but that's not always possible. And I may not be smart all the time because I'm not Donald Fagen, but this felt like I was picking and writing songs that I really loved, and not that I just felt were necessary to add for the keys to doors I could get into. You know, it was like I stand by every one of these songs. I'm not saying they're the best or the worst. I'm just saying they're absolutely what I've loved in my life, and they mean something to me. So.
You never know when you tell a singer or songwriter how something strikes you or what it sounds like. They may be very complimented by it, or they may say, oh, but yeah. hear me out. So listening to, and I'm probably, for people that have an ability with languages, I'm probably, sans le bleu.
Yeah, song. So song means without, you know.
Okay.
And it, originally I would have said sans the blues,
right?
Without the blues, and that phrase has fished around in my head for many years. But then, as I listened to Jimmy and other better French speakers, you didn't hear that, Jimmy, pronounce it. It was more like sans le blues, without the blue. You know, it's do you want to say more about that, or do you?
Well, you know, one time we did this interview about the Beatles tribute record that you made. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, there's Beatles stuff here, there, and everywhere. I didn't mean to say it like that.
But the soul poster.
You were talking about how there's this there's a bit of show tunes in the Beatles music. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that song has a bit, you could almost imagine it in a Broadway show.
Yeah, I'll be totally honest with you now, because we're talking about the album that was supposed to be totally honest. I've often thought I would make an album as kind of a nod, as the Beatles album was, a nod to all my favorite artists and what they did. And if you listen, knowing my love of the Beatles, Honey Pie.
Yes.
Honey Pie, you are making me crazy. I'm in love, but I'm lazy. So won't you please come home? I mean, come on. That's all Paul McCartney in Sans les Blues. Lifting off, feeling free, unleashing a smile with a new geography. Shake that heartache off of my shoes. Tribute to be Sans les Blues. You know, you've lost your love. You're tired of it. You're never going to do it again. I'm tired of this crap of having to give my life to someone else and going through all those tears. I'm going to be free of the blues. And, of course, then he goes on to Paris. A Paris cafe with the tilt of her hat. She wore a smile, a look that laid me flat. We shared a laugh. Share the afternoon. Shall we two be sans les blues? Okay, so now he's falling in love again. So, but thank you, Paul, for Honey Pie and all that. I just thought, I'm going to write something like that. And this lyric idea came up, and it seemed like the perfect setting. So
I'm not crazy.
You are not crazy? No insult taken? Sorry, Paul, I ripped off your idea.
I didn't know how that was going to go. And you said, well, I got to be honest with you. I thought, uh-oh.
Well, it's so true. And then, okay, and then the song comes around, so he's like, I don't know how this is going to go. Well, you know, at the end, her eyes burn like the embers, steal a glow from Notre Dame. Poor Saint Louis, we kissed goodnight, never saw that girl again. Well, that's not quite. How the story goes, I married her, I watched her family grow. Anyway, I say in the liner notes, you know, this was my experience of going to France and falling in love, and I never left St. Louis. So it's, you know, meeting my what was to be at that time my future wife. So the imagination drives us even when it gets us into trouble. So.
Very well done. Well, there's a song on there that I think is really interesting, Believe Me. And some interesting co-writers on there. Tell us about how this song found its way on the record.
Good question. Mac, when Brendan and I did our album, long story short, Mac played the song for me, and I really loved it. And I had said to Brendan at that time, you know, we call him B here at home. B, I think you should do this song. It's a really cool song about imagination, and it's got a wizard of a guitar part played by Mac, and Larry Golding co-wrote it. A fantastic musician, jazz player, organist, et cetera, et cetera. And B said, yeah, I really like that. Let's get to it. And we never got to it. So here I am putting songs together for this album. And I knew Mac would have a hand in it somehow, and I'll tell you why, because Mac McAnally is a singular person, musician, writer, a heart. I mean, you talk about, you know, quite a storied human being there, that treats others as storied human beings. But I knew he would be a hand in helping put together music that I could be proud of. And so I said, Mac, I'm going to do that song. And I started learning the guitar part, and I called up Mac that afternoon, and I think I got it close, and I'm like, Mac, close isn't good enough. I need Mac to play this guitar part, and then I'll overdub some other stuff that I can get pretty close at. So he did that, and we just made a little duet with a beautiful little, I think this is a Macism, you know, Larry and Mac wrote it together, but believe me. Believe me, all night long, stuck inside a song. It seems the least that I can do is learn to sing along. What, oh gosh, I'll have to relearn it again, but that's kind of how it talks about our particular songwriting profession and how you're always having to wake up in the morning believing you can somehow touch the unbelievable. So. Hmm. Thank you, Mac, for that song. And I should mention right away, the song Something Good also was kind of saved and brought to life by Mac as well with his lyric work. So
I think one of the interesting things about Mac McAnally is that people would have this idea, because he's a Southern guy, that, oh, he must be a country musician. Well, he most certainly can be, but also, you know, listen to him do this bluegrass thing.
Yeah.
Listen to him play this jazzy thing, or you know, something jammy like the Allman Brothers Band. Yep. You know, he's just.
He won't ever claim to be a lead guitar player, but then listen to him wail in one of his live shows on Heard It Through the Grapevine. You know, it's amazing, and I'll add one more epaulet. You know, to your congratulations of Mac, who's just an amazing musician, but he is so humble, humble enough to get out of the way when it's his time to play and listen for what needs to be there. And that is the mark of a true musician. When you can stop being yourself and be the song. And that's Mac's unique quality that I aspire to all the time. So.
Something that I really like, it's kind of worked in the album in such a way that it felt very, very natural, but it also added that little bit of difference, that little bit of variation. Getting to hear different people duet with you.
Mm-hmm.
Mac McAnally, as we've been talking about, but also your son, Brendan Mayer.
Yeah.
Tell us about how it felt bringing in these other vocals to the record.
Yeah, I knew I wanted B to sing with me on this record. His voice is one I really love, first of all. It's different than mine. We're in the same bloodline, but he's about 3 or 4 inches taller than I am and has got a little bit deeper voice. It's still a wonderful range, but I knew I wanted to get Brendan, who I love playing with, in on this. And that was kind of like a vicarious thrill for me in terms of knowing that we could do this song too in our shows together. And the song I'm talking about is Two of a Kind. And Brendan and I are in some ways so similar and so different. But it was also about the rest of my family and most of my friendships as well, when I think across the people that have are really the reason I'm still alive and here. My wife, for one, is the reason I'm still alive in here, and other friends too have made my life that way. And I started thinking about, you know, we're so same, but one of the reasons this works is because we're so different. It's like, and thank God, with some people I don't have to talk politics, with other people I don't get into heavy duty psychological things, with other people we don't talk about the Oak Ridge Boys or whatever. You know, we always have our boundaries. But When I think of them, and Paul, believe it or not, I went through a a really tough physical thing back, serious physical thing back about almost 9 years ago now. Hmm. And after that, when I had to start my repair and healing, kind of rebirth in life, and think about like how do I want to continue? And it became more and more necessary to start seeing every damn person that enters the room like this. Like, we're two of a kind, clear-eyed and blind, like poetry that don't have to rhyme, but it sure feels like sunshine when we don't see eye to eye. Makes me wonder how it feels so right. I'll get lost with you any old time. Two of a kind. When I start seeing the people around me like that, it just makes life better for me. And I'm hoping for them as well. Kind of like, hey, you work the counter at a 7-Eleven. I bought some gas. I want to get out of here as soon as possible, please. But for that moment, when I can have something akin to that attitude, it makes me just feel more alive, or like I'm part of a big old family line that I can count on when I'm screwing up. So, you know, that's where that one came from. But having Brendan on it made it extra special. Because now we get to do it at our gigs.
Something, you know, the title of this, Songs for the Birds, you know, and you have these little dogs that are all around here. This maybe sounds like a, I don't know, just way out there question, but what do animals mean to you?
Well, my first thought was, we so discount the things that don't operate with our own language in our lives. I'm not saying we're all messed up for that. I'm just saying I think we fall asleep to the fact that that little dog sitting down there knows things that I only dreamed of knowing. And sure, I've got a human brain, which we think is the highest of all the highs. But Paul, I was raised in the church, and the church often forgets this, sadly. But when we were taught that there's a greater than that only that knows heavens more than we can even dream, we're supposed to be humble about saying we know everything. Mm. We're even supposed to be humble about saying we know that greater than. Mm. Because having it be unknowable means that there is chance for rebirth and growth, and chance that you are remade within that. And so to me, I don't know, as I get older, I really treasure the earth that's being really challenged by us, the smartest of all being, in quotation. And we need to do something about that. And my way of doing it is to pay attention to them and listen to them. I walk these guys every day. And you know, my wife and I are vegetarian and stuff. And I'll say to you right now, fans, and you, Paul, who are listening, it's not as though I deny that people have a right to set their life and eat what they want to eat and do this. And I know our legacy involves, in other words, life consumes itself to stay alive. You know what I mean? Like, we eat other creatures, and I know I kill creatures as I walk through the grass. That's just how life works. But to do that with a knowledge that we somehow still are family changes the way I walk across the grass. It changes the way I order at a restaurant. And so that's how I feel about creatures, is that the same greater than that made me made them. And I have something to learn from them. So I try to keep that in mind. And ever since I was in high school, being an introvert, being shy, trying to meet girls, Paul, they were my way to get a little solace. You know, there's a song on the album called Sundog, and it's like, there's a line in there, I'd almost have to sing it to remember it, but like, you, no matter what I did, you still love me. You, no matter what I do, it's a wonderful thing to have that relationship with them. And, you know, sure enough, I believe me, I've got plenty of an ego. I've got plenty of this and that, but I always try to make room for that creaturely part of the universe. And I'm talking about forests and trees and all that, to teach me. So,
you know, I got, I was asked, do you mind dogs before we began the interview? And I have to say, this little guy, this is Corky.
Yeah, this is Corky.
Yeah. Has added just such an incredible gift of peace.
Can you just believe being that? Here. Yeah, he's just having, yeah.
Just right. Sleeping here.
Yeah. How did that, I'm trying to think of the first lyric of Sundog. I just sang it, but. Yeah. The start of the day. Rain or shine, 5 a.m. that tail unwinds. Knocking on the floor, jumping on the bed. Guess we'll get some sleep, honey, when we're dead. Her tranny is built, 4 on the floor. Gear shift swinging out her backyard. The perfume of the morning she'll apply. Pile of dead something or a bird poop pie. You're my sun dog, my only one dog. Nothing is said, but I know I just met someone who loved me no matter what I did. She's been barking at the postman, knocking at the door, ate a chunk of his pants, but he's back for more. Brought you a treat, made you his friend. He still counts his fingers when you lick his hand. He's my sun dog, you're never done, dog. Nothing is said, I know it's true. Someone who loves me no matter what I do. Some dog, my only one dog. Chasing a ray across the fields of the afternoon. Goes something like that. Yeah, written and watching these guys run around.
A source of inspiration.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the interesting things, most of your records, for the most part, have been all something you wrote or co-wrote, with the exception of the Beatles record, of course. But this record, it ends with a song, again, going back to show tunes. Mm-hmm. It's a classic song. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your decision to end the record.
Yeah. Again, self-serving for sure, but I, you know, the things that count most to us, though they may be selfish, if I feel that little tingle at the back of my neck and I feel the tears starting, it's because it's connected to some other salty thing, like an ocean or the other people who cry for joy, cry for grief, cry just because your daughter just got married, you know, which I just went through. But when I was about, I'm going to say five, 6 years old, just before I left India, we lived on what we called a compound in India, in the middle of a very rural, agrarian place, poor folks out there. My father had a ministry, you know, he was a pastor. And I got asked by our neighbors to go to the big city, which was, you know, not that big, but 100 kilometers away. And we went to see My Fair Lady. And there's a song there, that's one of those moments when I first heard the Beatles, when I listened to my dad's classical records, when I went to My Fair Lady, I heard those songs, and you were talking, Paul, about show tunes. I was just like, these are amazing songs. They move my heart, you know. And yes, are they sappy? Of course. Are they maudlin? Of course. Sound of Music. I mean, but you listen to those. You know, come on. Edelweiss. I mean, the melody itself is just so gorgeous. You may not be a Sound of Music fan, but if you're a fan of music, you can't ignore that one. But this particular song, let me make sure I'm in tune here. was called On the Street Where You Live. And so COVID comes along. I've always played it. I have often walked down the street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once have I seven stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live. So COVID comes along, and I'm floored. I always had sang this with my daughter, in fact. Just like, I think it's the most beautiful expression of like, hey, this is a wonderful life. And wherever the hell it is you grew up, whether it's Utah or Wichita or St. Louis or Nashville, that street that you live owns you. And hopefully you're, that love that you have with you keeps you in love. And anyway, so I had COVID all this time. And so each day I put together a little bit of the, like a good... I have to remember. Took my time and tried to weave together what that song meant to me as a guitar solo. Now, when it came time for the record, Paul, I was like, how can I leave out Lerner and Lowe's lyrics? You know, it's like with this beautiful melody. So I ended up singing and playing it together. And it's all for that My Fair Lady movie trip when I was 6 years old, you know, stuck with me.
Excellent. It's a very interesting way to end the record. I'm glad you did it.
You know, I asked I have to mention my friend. There's so many people that made this album possible, but Mike Davis, Terry Leder, all those, was just so, C.J. Sutherland did this beautiful cover. But I asked Mike at one point, because he listened to the music when I finally played it for anyone. I'm very protective of that, you know, because I played it for people before, like a song, and they'd be like, really, man? I just don't think where that song needs to go. And all of a sudden, you know, the infrastructure kind of collapses. But I played him that song, and he said, no, that song's got to be on there. Hmm. It's like, it's a part of you that speaks, and that's enough. It doesn't have to be on top of the hit parade right now. It's just a timeless song. So I appreciate that very much, though. And that's also the fact, Paul, that the album ends with, I think, two ballads. I think one of them maybe A Hole in the String. And what's at the end there? Is it?
Still Feels Good.
Oh, then, yeah. Still Feels
Good. Before that, A Hole in the String.
Yeah. Yeah, so we kind of end on this. I'm not going to say it's a down note, but Terry Leder said, yeah, there's some melancholy to this album that you just kind of let go there. And I will say this. All about this. Sometimes that word scares people because they're like, come on, keep it up. We need sunshine. Which I love Jimmy Buffett for. I love that spirit that he's got. But we also got rain, and we got the joy that comes from knowing both of those things. And for this album, I treated it with the same honesty that Green Eyed Radio was made in. And if you think of the time of Green Eyed Radio, PM was breaking up, basically. Some of those songs were meant for PM on Green Eyed Radio. And it was a really hard time in our lives. But all of a sudden, I thought, well, what's always been that elixir that kept me alive, and it was music. And this album felt like the bookend to that. It almost felt like, go ahead, 30 years, and this is what music is saying to me.
Hmm. Well, there is some melancholia on Songs for the Birds, but not, you know, you look at the cover here, and there's just a little bit of this melancholic, but then you also see the birds, and you see, of course, the sunlight shining through. It's a great record.
Thank you so much. I I appreciate it. Like I said, I always have wanted people to say that your music means something to me. Like Sting said, when someone whistled Roxanne out his hotel room, it's like, yes, I mean something. I have a purpose in life. But the fact that this started by just meaning something to me deep inside is enough to start with. And all I can do now is share it. And you are one that's been so good about sharing what we do. And we every single musician that you've interviewed thanks you for that.
Very kind. Any last words for our listeners out there?
Well, I'll tell you what comes to mind, since we're going to just get, you know, we're going to get the heartfelt stuff out for this interview, and then we can go on to AC/DC, your next interview. But for my daughter's father of the bride's speech, I ended with, I kind of went through what I wanted to say and tried to get a little humor in there and all the, you know, all that stuff. At the end, though, I said, I want to end with a toast and a blessing. And there's a guy named Henri Amiel. I think it's A-M-I-E-L. Anyway, I heard this in church at some point long ago when I played a concert in a church and I really loved it. And he said, the road of life, this is to you folks out there. I love you all and thank you for listening. But the road of life is long and winding, and we have far too little time to gladden the hearts of those we travel with. Oh, be quick to love. Make haste to be kind. That's it.
Great last words.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Would you help me do the dishes now?
I will. I will.
No. After the wedding, there were a lot of dishes.
Happy to help.
Yeah. All good. All good. We'll just serve you more coffee. You can. Yeah, but would you applaud as we do dishes? My wife and I were finally left alone for some time last night, and so we just watched one of our favorite programs, and then we got to, it's like dishes got to be done, so we just started doing them together. But it felt so good just to have it quiet. But there's still dishes to do. You just went through the most biggest celebration of your life, and you got to do the dishes. That's part of it. You go on.
There will always be dishes.
Yeah.
You know, the Paul Leslie Hour is made possible by people like you. Listeners, viewers, please go to thepaulleslie.com/support and you'll know what to do when you're there. Thank you. Thank you, everyone who contributes. Performance of The Entertainer intro song by John Primerano. And of course, this is your announcer speaking. See you next time on the Paul Leslie Hour.